Okay, so we are going to be in a very, well, maybe a familiar passage to a lot of us today. Something that is going to definitely, if you've spent any significant amount of time in church, it's gonna bring up some memories, okay? So it's going to be out of Luke chapter 19, okay? Luke chapter 19, and the subtitle of this passage is called Zacchaeus the Tax Collector. Okay, Zacchaeus the Tax Collector. And I'm not going to ask anyone to get up here because I'm afraid at this church people would, okay? And I'm not going to ask anyone to sing any songs about Zacchaeus right now, but I'm sure that many of you could actually sing a song about Zacchaeus being a wee little man, right? Does anyone remember that? Yeah. That Sunday school favorite? Okay, good. So we're gonna look into this. What I found about this passage, and I love this passage, but what I found about this passage is it is so simple, but there's a lot here. There is a lot here about us. It's simple, yet it has an amazing, powerful story, an amazing, powerful message for anyone who is looking to have an encounter with Christ, maybe for either for the first time or for again, okay? So I want to read these 10 verses, Zacchaeus the tax collector. I want to read that first. I want to go all the way through it, then we're going to backtrack, okay, guys? Zacchaeus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man, too, is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." So probably the key verse is the last one we just read. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And the lost, when you hear that word lost, let's just think about that word lost for a minute. What kind of emotions well up in you when you hear the word lost? I love it. All right, we're going to have a little interaction. I like that. This could be discouragement. Love it. Anyone else have an emotion with the word lost? Fear, confused, discouragement? Not knowing where you're going. Anxiety. Helplessness, grievance. Anything else? Lost. What awesome words, by the way. Lost. Wandering. No hope. Lonely, not found, okay? So I can relate to just about everything you've said in feelings I felt in loss. There's one I'm going to add to that, and I'm surprised some of the men might not have come up with this one. When you're lost, you get ticked off or angry, all right? Especially if your wife's next to you in the car. Right, so you're lost, and you know that you know you should have really pulled up GPS a lot faster, okay? Or you thought you knew, but and now you're hearing about being lost, and now you're just angry. So loss can give you all kinds of desperation, anxiety, helplessness, hopelessness. It could also make you angry. Like I knew where I was going, but now I'm not there. But all these feelings of lost show us that, you know, we are in a spot that we're not that we don't want to be, number one. And we're in a spot where we're not supposed to be. We're supposed to be somewhere else. We're lost. So if you want to just break it down to a real simple definition, lost is somewhere where you're not supposed to be. Okay? But you're there. Now, you might have got there by accident. You might have got there by making a wrong decision, wrong turn. But you're there. There's all different reasons for why you get there. And then the other thing about being lost is this. Whenever you go to any large event or any place or any church or whatever, there's a lost and found table, right? So they don't just say the lost table. They say lost and found. And the other thing about lost is this that you have to realize. Lost, hopefully something doesn't stay in that lost and found table forever. Hopefully someone goes and picks up what's on that table and says, oh, here it is. I found it. Lost is supposed to be temporary, not supposed to be forever. Okay? And the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Now, we get lost all the time. You could be lost. Now we'll bring it back to spiritual since we're on a Sunday morning message here. All right, we're gonna talk about being lost from a spiritual sense. You can be lost and not know Jesus Christ at all. You could be lost and know Jesus Christ and just not be where you're supposed to be with Jesus Christ. We've been lost at all different times in our lives. So we're talking about people, talking about maybe ourselves, who might be in a state of, I wish I was somewhere else right now. If you know, we Pastor Ruth came up here and shared about being, you know, flying on eagle's wings, being just something amazing happening in our lives. Maybe you're not flying on eagle's wings right now. Maybe you're not where you want to be. Okay? Maybe you want that change in your life. Maybe you're lost and you say, I wish I was somewhere else. I wish I was at a different place in my faith. So this is a message of Zacchaeus the tax collector, a guy who was lost and was found, that can relate to any single person here. Okay, that can relate to any person here tonight, this morning. It's very important to realize that. And we're going to start in verse 1. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. The first thing I want to stop and look at is that phrase, passing through. Okay, what does that mean? It means he was on his way. Okay, Jesus was on his way to the end of his life on earth here. All right, he was on his way, but he was passing. So he was getting to where he was going. He was passing through. It means he wasn't going to stay in Jericho, you know, for an elongated period of time. He was passing through. Now, what does that mean? It means that whoever was in Jericho at that moment didn't know how long Jesus was going to be there, or if they'd get a chance to maybe see Jesus, or if they'd get a chance to be with him for a while, or you know, spend time or whatever. And what I get out of this is that he's passing through, and there was some urgency on the fact of people to actually go have an encounter with Jesus. We don't have that urgency all the time. But we have to realize this. There's passing through moments always. We don't know when our passing through moments are. We don't know when Jesus is calling us to have an encounter, is calling us to get where we need to be. And we don't know when that last opportunity is going to be. He's passing through. There's a time, there's an urgency in this setting, where Jesus is there, but he's not going to be there forever. Where we, you know, this man is there, and he's realizing, I got to act now. So many of us, though, in our when we're looking at our faith, we say, hey, I'll act later. You know what? I'm not ready right now. I'm not walking right now to go to meet with Jesus. Let me clean up this area of my life first. And then I'll feel better about talking to Jesus. Then I'll feel better about going to be with Jesus. Then I'll feel better about spending time with him. And that's the exact wrong mentality. We need to encounter Jesus at this moment and realize there is an urgency. He wants to do something amazing in us, and he wants to move now. So this guy Zacchaeus, as we're going to read right now, didn't have it all together, but he understood the urgency. He understood the moment exactly. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So we look at verses 2 and 3 here. Zacchaeus, basically a nutshell of who Zacchaeus is, a character profile. Who is Zacchaeus? Okay, chief tax collector, wealthy guy. Money wasn't an issue for him, apparently. He was the chief tax collector. That's a position of authority. Okay, so he had a position. He had wealth. He also had another physical attribute that we're going to get to in a second. But let's talk about being a chief tax collector back in those days. And many of us know this already, but that chief tax collector was someone who was in a position to collect taxes, but in most cases would go collect a lot more than just the taxes. And they would collect extra. And they would put, and that extra would go into a couple different things, mostly into their back pocket, okay? Secondly, it might go into bribing the military. Hey, listen, I'll take care of you, you take care of me, okay? So this guy was running a racket, a quote-unquote legal extortion ring of just raking it in. And everyone in that community, everyone in that area knew who Zacchaeus was, and everyone in that area hated him for that reason. So because of his position, because of the way he took advantage, he was despised. So he may have had wealth, he may have had a position of authority, he didn't have people in his life that cared about him, okay? And the other thing he didn't have was a lot of feet and inches, all right? And when he went to the doctors and looked at his, and went to get his physical done, he was a short man, okay? He was someone who was known for being, oh, there's Zacchaeus, there's that little guy coming to bother us again. He was known by the way he looked. And that is very important. And there's a reason for this being mentioned in this passage, that Zacchaeus was a short man. He could not see over the crowd. Now, we know Jesus was passing through, and we know at this point there was a popularity factor that everyone wanted to see Jesus, but Zacchaeus could not see because he was short. We can all relate to this, all right? We've all gone to the local parade. We've all gone to a concert, okay? If you're behind someone that's bigger than you, it's not a happy experience, okay? You don't want that experience. You will move. We'll go to the parade early, and we'll work backwards. We'll start at the end and then just work backwards to find a nice spot, front row, and everyone gets to sit there. And when they throw candy, the kids can run out, and no one's going to get in the way. It's going to be a good position. The fact of the matter was, this guy was short, and he was not in a good position because he could not see over the crowd. And here's what happened. His short stature, if you will, or his shortcomings are what led to the most amazing experience. Now, I want us to understand this. If he wasn't short, he might have stood in the front row like this. Jesus passed by, and this story's never in the Bible. Okay? But because he's short, because he couldn't see, an amazing story unfolds. And here's what I get out of this, that our deficiencies, our problems, our shortcomings in life often lead to the greatest opportunities. Okay? There might be something that you're going through that you say, I have absolutely no ability to control this thing. Better give it to the Lord. This guy couldn't make himself grow no matter how far he, how much he tried ever. Impossible. There's nothing he could do to make himself grow. But his shortness, his stature, led to a situation where he had the most amazing, life-changing encounter. And that's what happens with us when we take our shortcomings and we do what Zacchaeus did. Verse 4, he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. So what is the first thing he said? I can't see, I'm short, I need to run. Okay, now I just ran a 5K, okay? Now, maybe from a few years ago, I might be in a little bit better shape, okay, than I was a few years ago when I came to this church. But running a 5K is not like, hey, let me just go do that. You know, there has to be some real effort put into me actually running 3.1 miles. It's like, you know, if I don't do that, it's going to be a miserable, much longer period of time than it should take to run a 5K, all right? So here's the reality that you need to realize. Anytime you run, okay, anytime you run in any aspect of life, there's effort put into that, okay? There is something, it's a decision you're making that I need to do this. So his shortcomings, his stature led him to running. And this was a decision. Running is a decision, guys. People make fun of runners, okay? The kids in my school that can't run, that are, you know, whatever, they say, oh, what do you do cross country for? Well, yeah, why would you run for fun? You know, like that's an active decision to run. This guy made a decision to run. He made a decision. And here's the reality. He was running towards something great. He was running towards the direction he needed to be running towards. When we have a problem in our lives, when we have a deficiency in our lives, when we have something holding us back in our lives, where do we run is the question. Do we run towards Jesus to get a view of Jesus, or do we run to something else? If we look at ourselves, we might say, wow, last time I had a problem, last time I was really stressed out, where did I go? What decision did I make? Which area, what place did I run to when that happened in my life? This guy, at this point, made a decision. I need something in my life to change. I'll try that. So he ran towards a view of Jesus. He ran ahead and climbed the sycamore fig tree. He ran ahead. That means the rest of the crowd was behind him. So that means oftentimes in our lives, guys, the crowd that we follow may be the actual thing holding us back. Okay? For this guy, the crowd that he was around was disrupting his viewpoint. He had to get out of there. The people in his life were the ones that were blocking him. In our lives, oftentimes the people are the ones that are blocking him. And I believe there's sometimes you're called to be with people, and there's sometimes that you're called to get away from people. So are the people you're around right now people that you need to be with, that Jesus is saying, hey, you need to spend some time with this person? Or are these people that you say, hey, listen, it'd really be more healthy for you, it'd be better for you to just take a break, or move past, or as Zacchaeus, run ahead, or get away from these people? What is he calling you to do with certain people in your lives at this point? For him, he had to get away. Otherwise, he was going to be blocked. Ran ahead, and then what happened next? Climbed a sycamore fig tree to see. Since Jesus was coming that way, he climbed the sycamore fig tree. Now, I love this part of the thing, and it's one of the favorite, you know, parts of the passage that you can do talking to just about a crowd of anyone. Now, if I talk to a crowd today of young people about climbing trees, they'll be like looking at me like, huh? What do you mean? Climbing trees? Is that an Xbox game? You know, like, nah, like is that something on PlayStation? Like, and don't get me started on, you know, this, but reality is this, guys. Who in here climbed a tree when they were a kid? Okay? Thank you. Okay, good. Who thinks today, who's with me, who thinks today that more kids today should be climbing trees and working out their bodies and getting a little dirty, skinning their knees instead of doing this? Ding, 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 ding. Instead of working out their thumbs in front of the tube, okay? And playing Xbox. So it depends. If I was speaking to another crowd, a younger crowd, they might climb in trees. What is that? Climbing trees was the most amazing adventure as a kid. I remember the first time, like, my buddy came in and said, "Hey, listen, check this bag of nails out. We're going to climb a tree. We're banging nails in." And we spent that whole summer. I think the majority of time for that summer, we spent above ground in a tree. It was great times that when I first did that. Now, as a child, today and back then, you're supposed to climb trees. It's normal, right? But as an adult, what if I walked out of my job this week and I looked at a tree and said, "Wow, I'm getting the urge again. Let me get up there." And I got up in that tree and I just started climbing. I'm a school teacher, by the way. So you go up in this tree and you climb. What if I climbed the tree outside my school and say, "Hey guys, how are you? I'm here." I probably don't have a job the next day, all right? What is this crazy guy doing in a tree, okay? Some things that are good for kids are not good for adults. And all the more reason for Zacchaeus being in this position of authority. Okay, if you look into this passage, you see, you look at what this might have meant for a guy of his position, of those, you realize that the most Bible scholars think he paid an enormous social price getting in that tree, that people were looking at him and saying, "He is nuts. Crazy man. He's lost it. He's done. Not only is he a crook, he's just an absolute loon," okay? And that's the type of way that people would have looked at this guy. They hated him, and now they had another reason, okay? Socially, he was definitely going to pay a price. We would pay a price if we were publicly in a tree, probably, okay? But he certainly would have back then as well. And what does that mean? He didn't care. He knew it. He said, "This is my opportunity to see Jesus. I need to do it. I'm not letting the crowd be my barometer. I'm not staying with them. I'm running ahead. And I'm also going to just do what it takes. And I don't care if they think I'm crazy." If we took that attitude in our lives and said, "I don't care what it takes, I need Jesus. I don't care what it takes, people will know I'm connected to Jesus. I don't care if they think I'm crazy. I don't care if they look down on me. I don't care if I pay a social price. I'm connected to Jesus." See, this guy put himself in a position and he wasn't letting others dictate where he was going. He said, "This is more important." Okay, and he didn't even know. He didn't even know what he was in for. All he knew was, this has got to be better than what I'm going through right now. This has got to be better than what I'm going through at this moment. And I'm going to try. I'm going to give a chance to Jesus right now. I'm going to just put myself in his in viewpoint. I'm going to explore what this guy's all about. I need to see him. So he climbed the sycamore fig tree since Jesus was coming that way. Now, childlike act, climbing this tree. We just talked about that. This childlike act is where faith begins and where faith continues. So you've all heard the phrase, we must be childlike, not childish. Absolutely. Nothing could be more true. But when I think of children, I think of my own children. And I was talking to some people earlier and they were asking me, "How's your girl?" My 4-year-old now is amazing. She's actually at a fun age, okay? My 2-month-old is okay, all right? All right, that's an okay stage of life. My 4-year-old's fun. And she goes everywhere with daddy. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, she's learned that Home Depot is awesome, okay? So she'll get in the car, and it doesn't matter, all right? Where are you going? To Home Depot? Where are you going? BJ's, Walmart, whatever. Let's just go. So my daughter straps into the car, and this is when I think of childlike faith, I just get a picture of this right now. She's into my back seat, in her car seat. She's strapped in, and she doesn't say, "Now, Daddy, before you put the key in the ignition, please tell me where we're going today." She doesn't make any stipulations on it. She doesn't say, "Hey, you need to tell me exactly what's going to happen next. Otherwise, I'm not going." She straps in. She puts her belt. We put her belt on. I get in the car seat. And she simply says this: "Daddy, where are we going today? Daddy, where are we going?" Guys, we're talking about childlike faith. I couldn't think of a more theologically relevant sentence than that. Daddy, where are we going? When you want to move forward in your faith, wherever you're at, whether you don't even have faith, whether you don't even know who Jesus is, or whether you've known him for 20 years, the phrase is still the same. Daddy, where are we going? And you get in line with him, and you move forward. That's childlike faith. That's what it takes to move forward with Jesus Christ. That's what this guy was doing at that point, Zacchaeus, without even knowing what he was getting into. And when Jesus reached him, verse 5, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now, as we look at this, there's a few key words called stay, welcomed, and in the next verse, be a guest. It says, all the people saw this and began to mutter. He's gone to be the guest of a sinner. Guest, welcomed, stay. Those words mean that Jesus was inviting himself over to Zacchaeus' house. Jesus was inviting himself. Jesus saw him, said, "Come down immediately." And he was invited, and he was going to stay for a little while. Now, we don't know how long that time frame was, but here's the chronology. Come down. So what did Zacchaeus do? He put himself in a position to be seen. Okay? Childlike position. I just need an encounter with Jesus. Jesus gets there. "Come on down, buddy. We're going home." That's what happened. That's the deep, crazy, spiritual beginning of their relationship. "Come on down. Let's go." And then they went. And these words show that now Zacchaeus was going to bring this guy into his house. We know that he's open. He's willing to bring Jesus in. Now, this is a very recent little occurrence. On Friday night, we're sitting down, and the end of a Friday night, having a little family pizza night at the house. And I happen to have the in-laws staying at my house right now, and we're all sitting there enjoying family pizza night. And we got, you know, the kids finally got one of them settled down. One of them's actually eating, and we're having a time. And then we get a knock on the door. Now, did I want that knock on the door at that moment? No. A lot of times, if you knock on the door, man, I'm turning. You know, we're just gonna play. Have you ever seen that commercial where they're just crawling and they're just like, "Do you think they saw us?" You're not letting someone into your place, man. So, and other times I've gotten the warning from my wife ahead of time. Listen, no one's coming over, all right, until this house looks much better, all right? Or no one's coming. We're not letting. So chances are, if you don't call first, you're not coming in, all right? But we happen to get the knock on the door, which like. You know, 25 years ago was like totally normal, right? It was like, you know, the knock on the door, come on in. Now today, man, the knock on the door is like, what is this person doing in my life, okay? You're bringing this person into an intimate situation, all right? This dinner time setting, life at home, and you know, the reality is this. That's what happens, guys. When you bring someone into your house, they're going to see what's really going on behind closed doors. They're going to be there. They're going to see the dirty clothes in the corner. They're going to see the toys all over the house. They're going to see all that stuff going on in your life. And they're going to know what you're really all about. And the first thing Jesus wanted to do was say, hey, come on down. We're going home. He wanted to get into his life. All right? And Zacchaeus opened the door. Zacchaeus didn't say, hey, Jesus, just give me a couple hours to clean up first. Let me sweep up. Let me clean up before I really let you see what's going on at home. See, that's us. Yeah. Zacchaeus was in a different spot at that moment. Okay? We'll oftentimes say, hold on, let me clean up, let me sweep up, let me get this thing all settled. But no, Zacchaeus said, let's go, Lord. I'll show you what's really going on. Come on in. Come on in. Let's spend some time. We don't know how much time. We know he's passing through, but we know he's going to spend some time with Zacchaeus. We know it was going to be a time to get to know him. Okay? He brought him home for a period of time. Those days, even more than today, much more than today, in fact, bringing someone into your house was a deep sign of friendship. That's why everyone was ticked off. That's why everyone around looked at this and said, what is he? What is Jesus going to that guy's house for? And you know what? We were part of that crowd. We'd be saying the same exact thing. We didn't like this guy. This guy stole from us. This guy wronged us. We'd be exactly in the same situation as that crowd. But here's the reality. Jesus works in different ways. He's not looking at what this guy's done. He's looking at what he can do. He's looking at what can be done. Okay? We're looking at, we're always measuring. We're always saying, hey, well, listen, this guy doesn't match up, or I'm better than him, he's better than me, this and that. There's no comparison game going on. Jesus is saying, this guy's open, I'm coming over. The rest of the crowd is playing that game. We're playing that game. Jesus is saying, let's go. Let's move forward. Wherever you're at right now, let's move forward. And he went to be a guest of Zacchaeus. All the people began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. Now, it's very important that we realize this, because we could take this out of, you know, we could realize as we read into this next section, we have to understand the connection was made with Jesus. He went to the house. He became a guest. He was connected to Zacchaeus. And then something amazing happens. And it's that order. It's that order that still plays out today. Okay? First, you have to connect to Jesus. You don't say, let me go do something awesome for Jesus. And then he'll be impressed, then we can be all good. Let me connect to him. Let me bring him in to my life. Even the dirty, messy corners of my house. Let me show it to him. Let him see it. Let him be there. And then, in verse 8, but Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, Lord, look, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Jesus spots Zacchaeus. Jesus invites himself over. They interact. And what happens next is Jesus has a true encounter with the king. Jesus says that Zacchaeus has a true encounter with Jesus. And his life is changed forever. A criminal, a crook, a guy who was doing it his own way, figuring it out on his own, doing whatever he wanted, saying, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay them back four times the amount. At that point in the crowd, you're like, man, I wish he would have cheated me. I would have got four times back. The crowd might have felt differently at that point. This guy was completely different. You couldn't mistake this. He didn't come in and say, hey, oh, Lord, thank you so much for coming over. Now I'm going to start tithing. It wasn't that. It was, Lord, it's all yours. Everything you've ever done was different. Everything I've ever done is now different. You came in, it's yours. You're in my life, it's yours. Take half of it, four times back to these other people. I'm not worried about the wealth I've accrued anymore. I'm not worried about the relationships I've hurt. I'm not worried about, I'm just going to follow you and trust you in this new life. And he just starts giving it away. Now, here's the reality, guys. This guy, money wasn't the issue for Zacchaeus. Okay, money wasn't, we talked about that. Position of authority wasn't the issue. He had a position, he had wealth. Okay, we may be sitting here in a different situation. That might not be our biggest talent, our biggest gift. But everyone sitting here today, and this is very important, guys, everyone sitting here today has an amazing gift from God. You have something that God's blessed you with. Could be a talent, could be a skill, could be time, could be ability. Your statements that you read, I am a great communicator. It could be an actual ability to do something. What are you blessed with? What has God given you that you might not even, and right now it may be buried. You might not even know everything God's given you. Yeah. What has God given you that now, Zacchaeus said, hey, it's my money. It's obvious for me, man. I've been hoarding it away and I've been stealing it and just throwing it in the back here. And now I got it. Now here it is, Lord, it's yours. That was it for him. That was an obvious thing for him. What is it for you where you say, Lord, you're a part of my life now. It's all yours. Take it. Take my skill. Take my talent. Take my time. It's yours. Take my wealth. Take my possessions. Take my relationships. Take whatever. Take the things that are in my life and use it for your glory. This is the automatic thing that happened when Zacchaeus was met by Jesus. Things changed. It's called God's grace. As we allow him to be intimately connected with us and get into our lives, he will begin to change our worlds only the way that he can. He's the only one that can do it. There's no other motivation that makes you do something like this. There's no other motivation that makes you say, hey, Lord, I'm going to do this now. You may have had a gift and a talent, and you've just been using it, and you don't even realize it could be used for the Lord. But now he's a part of your life. And he's going to take that area that you don't even associate with God, and he's going to say, I'm doing something with that. There is a talent, there is a gift, there is a blessing on everyone here. I went out to Colorado. I just got this memory. I went out to Colorado as a young adult on a ski trip. And we're in Breckenridge, Colorado, skiing in amazing mountains and just, you know, living in a different buddy's apartments for a couple weeks and just going in. And one guy says, hey, come to my church. It's pretty cool. All right, we'll go. And went out on Sunday. It was good, great church service. And they announced something on hey, listen, come back on Tuesday night for soup night. Now, all right, fine. Well, you know, like, that's a free meal. We'll come. You know, like, we'll go back. So we're in Colorado. We just got done skiing. We're like, where are we going to have dinner tonight? It's Tuesday night. Let's go back to the church for soup night. What I didn't what none of us realized when we were going back to the church for soup night, okay, was that we were going to get served the most delicious soup to this day I've ever had in my life, homemade, scratch made, and the most delicious homemade bread that you've ever had in your life. And it was a gourmet meal. It wasn't just let me throw Campbell's on the burner and do soup kitchen ministry here, all right? It was gourmet five-star soups and breads and little, you know, appetizer spreads, okay? And here's what we relearned that night. The assistant pastor of the church was called out of a career of being like a head culinary, a head chef at a hotel or a five-star restaurant, and he was called into the ministry. No training. No, he just knew he was called into the ministry. And he said, I'm going to start giving what I got. And what was the first thing that he said? What could I do? Well, I can cook pretty good. Let me start using that. Let me start reaching the ski bums that they don't have any other money because they're working on the mountain and all they're doing out here is they want to ski all winter long. These young adult ski bums that are in Breckenridge, Colorado, that, you know what, they're looking for a cheap meal, they're looking for a free meal. I'll just do soup night at the church. And this place was packed with young adults that would have never entered a church building on a Sunday morning. When you look at what you got, everything you got, and you say, Lord, I'm yours, he starts moving in ways that you wouldn't even think. You think this guy planned it 20 years earlier? Hey, you know, well, first I'm going to go to the, you know, graduate college, then I'm going to go to this culinary school, then I'm going to, you know, get my resume in order, and then I'm going to get called into the ministry and use it all for the Lord. You think that's a plan that this assistant pastor in Breckenridge, Colorado had? You don't plan that stuff. The Lord says, hey, your resume, your skills, your abilities, all that stuff that you had no idea was going to be used for me, let's go. We're going to move. We're going to start working. And as you let him in, first, don't get this order mixed up. He comes home first. Then your world changes. Then your world changes. And when he comes home in those intimate spots, things change. And then Zacchaeus was never different again and visibly different to all. That crowd that he had wronged completely was about to be repaid four times. You think Zacchaeus showed up the next day at this guy's house and said, knock, knock, knock. This guy was like, you know, not wanting to open the door or not going to let him in or pretend he wasn't there. And Zacchaeus shows up, hey, buddy, listen, I messed up big time. Here you go. It was different. A total change in this guy's life when he went around and repaid all those people. This isn't just here. This isn't just, you know, a nice story. This is what happens when Jesus gets a hold of your life. Jesus said to them today, salvation has come to this house, verse 9, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. The lost. And we'll go back to that opening little introduction of lost and what that means to all of us. Whatever feelings you got going on, whatever emotions, whatever roller coaster ride you're on, wherever you say, here's where I am, but I need to be here. Here's where I am, but I want to be somewhere different. You are that lost person. It doesn't matter where you're at in your faith. Jesus is going to say, hey, man, there's a lost and found table back there. Don't stay in that lost table forever. Don't stay on that lost table forever. I can find you. And get that. Get that. From the very beginning of this story, Jesus did it all. From the very beginning of this story, Jesus did it all. He's the one that finds you. He's the one that finds you. You just have to be in a position to be found. He walks up and says, hey, let's go. Are you open? It's the only thing Zacchaeus did was be open to Jesus. Are you open to a move of Jesus in your life? If you're open to that, that's where faith starts. That's where faith continues. You leave that crowd behind. Stop letting them be the barometer. Stop letting them tell you how to live. Stop letting them say, oh, hey, it's okay. You're better than me. You leave the crowd behind. You start acting like a child. Say, Daddy, where are we going today? You then say, okay, I'm open. You want to come in? I'll actually show you what my house looks like. You'll come in. You'll see what it really looks like inside. You'll see what my life's really all about. And you know what? I don't care. You take it. Take the mess that I am and do what you're going to do. And then you allow his grace to move in the most transformative and unthinkable ways. And he's the one that takes you on a journey of just moving and giving and going forward in ways you never dreamt possible. And that's what Jesus does with lost people like us.